Worried about letting someone else pick out the perfect avocado for your perfect impress them on the third date guacamole? Well, good thing Instacart shoppers are as picky as you are. They find ripe avocados like it's their guac on the line. They are milk expiration date detectives. They bag eggs like the 12 precious pieces of cargo they are. So let Instacart shoppers overthink your groceries so that you can overthink what you'll wear on that third date. Download the Instacart app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
Okay, picture this. It's Friday afternoon when a thought hits you. I can waste another weekend doing the same old whatever, or I can conquer it. I can hop into my all-new Hyundai Santa Fe and hit the road. Any road. The steeper, the better. Because my all-new Santa Fe is available with H-Track all-wheel drive, so I can hit the trail without a worry in the world. Heck, with three rows and best-in-class rear cargo space, I can pack the whole family in with all our gear. We've got available dual wireless charging for our phones, so we'll never lose touch with civilization, and we won't lose touch with the primordial power of Mother Earth. So which is it? Waste the weekend? Or do something a little more epic and conquer it in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com or call 562-314-4603 for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.
Sports Radio 610 presents Payne and Pendergast.
All right, I'm looking at the TV. I'm so glad ESPN is back on in our studio. It's been on NBC the last 2 days.
We don't have the ability to change the television in
yes,
our studio.
It's looks
look, we're kind of a big deal, kind of a big media company. Odyssey is it's got 400 million podcasts, like a couple hundred radio stations, one TV channel on our
the functionality of changing it is in some server room where you and I don't have access to it, nor will we ever get access to it, I would guess.
They don't let us do any
stuff. We, back when we were owned by a TV company, we could change the TV channel in our room here in our studio.
It's interesting that you mentioned that. Our former affiliation with CBS back when we used to be CBS Radio.
Yeah.
That's one of the problems when I, for reasons that will soon become clear, I was going back to dig for old Greg Cassell audio.
Oh, yeah.
When Greg Cassell was on Mad Radio in the mornings. We had him for a couple years there. He was on every day. And the Osweiler season was one of them. So I went back to look for some audio of Greg Cassell talking about Brock Osweiler, and all of it's dead.
Erased.
So dead and gone.
Never happened. Yeah.
I wonder, that was on the internet, though, so maybe we go back into our own archives. This sounds like something I can task Ben with out of the blue.
Hey, Ben. What do you know about the internet?
Get to work on going in back into the archives of 2016.
You don't do enough stuff in there, Ben.
I'm going to need those in 45 seconds.
Ben, you only do seven things in there at once.
Yeah.
Let's add another. The reason I bring that up, and we'll get to Greg Cosell here in a second, the headline on Get Up on ESPN is the budding quarterback controversy in Pittsburgh with Mitchell Trubisky. Go figure.
Yeah.
Mitchell Trubisky's not working out. Ditch Mitch was the headline.
Dude, it was so – people try so hard, myself included. You try so hard to talk yourself into your quarterback.
Yes.
Because there's only so many. It's like trying to talk yourself into whatever car you had when you were 17, you know? Like, it was just, now this thing, I'll tell you what, for $500, I might as well have gotten a Mustang, this Mazda GLC.
Yeah.
Look at this, got a hand crank sunroof and everything. It breaks down a lot. That's Mitch Trubisky. Mitch Trubisky was, I don't know, I'm guessing a lot of people in Pittsburgh wanted Kenny Pickett immediately anyway and thought they were wasting time.
He had a good camp, probably. I just think it's funny. It's less about Pittsburgh and more the narrative around the league where all these national guys seem to be going to bat for Mitchell Trubisky.
That's
because
true.
He was such a good guy in Buffalo. He threw four passes.
That's true.
He had a real cleansing year in Buffalo. Like, what are you talking about? He didn't play.
Who was else? Mariota had a little bit of that effect in Oakland.
Yes.
With the Raiders.
Yes.
I can't remember whether it was Oakland or Las Vegas. But Mariota would come in for like a series here or there, and he would do things that you knew he was capable of doing.
Yes.
He'd run and he'd throw a couple balls to like to a wide open guy because the defense went super vanilla because the backup quarterback came in. And people act like he's had time to sit and learn. That's what's happened here.
You know what they have in common? They're both number two overall picks in the draft.
Yeah,
don't tell
me
where you were drafted doesn't matter. It's an immunity ticket for a job for the next 15 years.
There is always the chance that, okay, the guy's got physical upside, and maybe for whatever reason it didn't work in this coaching staff or this scheme, so we'll give it a fly here. Yeah. It seems like you could – yeah. Trubisky's not going to be the guy. I think the Steelers just don't want to put Kenny Pickett out there until he's ready.
Yeah. No, it could be the Pickett was a little overdrafted in the first round for sure. Speaking of young quarterbacks, Davis Mills – people are negative on Davis Mills right now, by and large, early in the season here, and rightfully so.
You and I are negative on Davis Mills.
We are. Davis Mills replace-o-meter is very high on this show right now.
The replace-o-meter, if you had to end the season today.
That's it.
Right. But, one, we have no choice but to be patient. And, two, yes, realistically, you probably shouldn't make your decision based on, let's say, five quarters of bad football, where there's three quarters where on the whole you'd say that, okay, Davis Mills looked pretty good. You've got five quarters because of the overtime period where you're not happy about Davis Mills at all. Okay, yeah, I guess if I were being a true adult, then I'd wait a little bit before I make my complete and total damnation. But right now it feels like I want to send him to quarterback hell.
I love how this conversation about how you're treating it and I'm treating it. I feel like I'm the more kind of like – urgent and stressed out of the two of us about this situation. You're a little more patient than me. This is the exact mirror of the press conference where you were talking me off the ledge about fluctuations in the stock market day to day a couple of weeks ago. You're like, bro, you can't follow your 401k on a daily basis. You're going to go crazy. Stop doing it. But that's what I'm doing here. I'm following Davis Mills snap to snap.
That's what you have to do.
Like, the Mills index went down 400 points today.
You sell everything. You'd end up with
right.
With Mills, though, I mean, the difference is that you bought Mills on the cheap.
I did.
Right?
Yeah.
Like, you bought him.
That's fair.
It's not like you paid top dollar for Davis Mills, so it's a little bit easier to ride it out. You don't feel like you've blown it and lost everything. He is what he is, and the term I've used with him is it's going to be a slow burn because he doesn't have these skills of a Josh Allen. You watch Josh Allen the other night, and my God, okay, that's not Davis Mills. It's going to have to be anticipation, timing, and accuracy. Right now, the reason it's discouraging so much is that his anticipation and accuracy has been abysmal for the last five quarters.
Yes.
That's the part that whatever his upside is, he's not gonna be able to show like, oh yeah, but look at how fast he is, or look at how strong his arm is. He doesn't have that in him. So he's gotta show that anticipation and timing and accuracy, and he hasn't had it.
That's right. And one of the national experts will say, Greg Cosell, NFL Films, does a lot of film work on guys. Yeah. He was very bullish on Davis Mills coming into this year. We played the audio a month or so ago from Ross Tucker's podcast, the Ross Tucker Football Podcast.
Yeah, and then this was last week, Ross Tucker himself alerted us to this on the Ross Tucker Football Podcast. After the Indianapolis game, Greg Cosell was also very high on Mills still.
Davis Mills has sort of been like a pet project of mine. I watched him a lot this summer, and I was kind of very impressed with him. He's your classic quarterback, repetitive mechanics, looks the same throwing the ball pretty much all the time. You know, good arm, can make certain throws that are not that easy. I mean, he can throw the dig ball really, really well against zone, between people, over people. He can drive it. He can throw it with what we call firm touch. So Davis Mills is just a quarterback that I'm looking forward to seeing each and every week. And I think that, you know, obviously Brandon Cooks is a good player. I think Nico Collins can be an ascending player. They've got two good tight ends in O.J. Howard, who was a factor last week, and Brevin Jordan, who's a very athletic. I think this is going to be an intriguing offense to sort of follow throughout the season, Ross. I think Mills has a chance to be a quality NFL quarterback.
Now, we should point out again, and I don't think Greg Cosell would radically change his assessment like maybe a Sean Pendergast would after 1 week. That was before the Denver game this past week.
Yeah.
So we should point that out.
But it was after the Indy game where Davis Mills did not look good in the final stretch
when it mattered,
of that game,
right,
too.
Yeah.
Where I think, and it, you know, the way Ross had presented that, it was almost like Ross was saying that Cosell – thought that Davis Mills had a good game, where I don't think that's necessarily what Cassell was saying. I think Cassell was saying he saw some of those things in that Colts game, but obviously he didn't show it down the stretch. Two things. One, I like the term firm touch. I want Davis Mills to give us the firm touch.
Yeah.
Give us the firm touch this week, every week. Give us the firm touch.
We love a firm touch.
Yes. I love a firm touch. Yeah. Gosh, especially from Davis Mills. Two would be, I think that, and I kind of did, I did a thing on Twitter, at Seth C. Payne. I did some of my vaunted, highly touted video editing last night, Sean.
You're outstanding at it.
I cut up a little highlight reel of Davis Mills from the first game. Almost all of the plays were from the first two and a half quarters. And
with Cosell's narrative over the top of it.
Yeah, I did a voiceover of Cosell's narrative, and it kind of, like, without even trying to match up the throws or anything, a lot of the things that he was talking about do show up in those good throws. You know, he's making some tight window throws, over the middle, into zone coverage. He driving the ball to the sideline is where I'm skeptical with Davis Mills. And that's where the timing and anticipation really matters, because a softly thrown ball to the sideline ends up being a Matt Schaub pick six.
Yes.
We know that all too well here in Houston. But those are the plays that he has made, the good plays he has made. He just needs to do those more consistently. And I think the fact that he's capable of doing it, but was so wildly errant on some of those types of throws after the strip sack, leads me to hope that it's just psychological at this point. And like normal psychology of a young guy who's like the guy for the first time. Yes, he started games last year. This is the first year where there's been the pressure on him, the feeling of carrying the offense on his shoulders. And sometimes it takes guys a little while to adjust to that. So I'm willing to be patient, mostly because I have no choice but to be patient.
Yeah. I would say one of the last times the Texans have had a quarterback that they've handed the keys to where everybody's been very split on, even early on in their careers as a Texan, would be Brock Osweiler.
Yeah.
As you pointed out to me before the show, Greg Cosell, if we're looking for, okay, how accurate is Greg Cosell in these things?
Yeah.
With the Texans, he was pretty accurate. He hated Brock Osweiler from the get-go.
Well, in 2012,
yeah.
Leading up to the draft, I saw a bunch of stuff. I saw a tweet from Greg Cosell, and this is about as nasty as Greg Cosell would get on Twitter. He's not like that. He's not kind of a pot stirrer. He says, someone said Osweiler could get into the first round. Absolutely not a first-round quarterback. On tape, he showed he needed functional space to step into throws. Big concern. We had him on every week in 2016. And I could tell from the very beginning that he had a pretty low estimation of what Osweiler's ceiling was going to be. But he was trying to be, you know, he's not trying to kill the guy before he shows what he can do. And by the time that Tom Savage replaced Brock Osweiler, you know, Cosell, like everybody else, had seen that, okay, this is necessary and this is needed. I think he was pretty consistently down on Osweiler or skeptical of Osweiler. In the interest of full transparency, though, he did think that Nathan Peterman perhaps was had a lot of potential.
We all get him wrong from time to time.
Yeah, we all get
Nobody's 100%.
He was intrigued by Nathan Peterman. Nathan Peterman would come in for the Bills and have the worst game by a quarterback ever in the history of the NFL.
Yeah, Nathan Peterman just struck me as a dude who just got scared going into NFL games. Like, everything's way too fast and way too stressful.
And I'm not even exaggerating about that. Like, by certain metrics, I remember people just being astounded at how bad Nathan Peterman was.
Yeah.
It was like, for a certain number of passes thrown, nobody ever thrown that many interceptions for that devastating an effect.
It was crazy. It was crazy. Payne and Pendergast with you on a Wednesday. John McClain joins us at 8 o'clock on the show today, brought to you by hornsolutions.net. Hey, Seth, a quick check-in on our Payne and Pendergast head coach death pool for the NFL. You and I pick four coaches before the season with the idea of one of us trying to get the one that's going to be fired first. And I would say we both have four coaches who are firmly up the odds board right now. There's a few that have presented themselves. The field, you know, field meaning the other 24 that you and I didn't take in this thing, all of a sudden the field is not looking so bad with Frank Reich in Indianapolis right now. Reich's got it. He's second on the odds board right now to be fired first. Now, Matt Rhule is the favorite. Matt Rhule is the favorite, and according to the power rankings, Carolina is the worst team in football right now. And I got Matt Rhule in this draft, so I'm feeling good about that. Your four were Mike McCarthy, who had a big win this weekend, Pete Carroll, and it looks like Seattle is back to where they're supposed to be, Cliff Kingsbury, who fished one out of the fire, really Kyler Murray fished that one out of the fire, and then Arthur Smith is 0-2 right now.
Oh, Arthur's – yeah, but with a plucky finish to that game where they –
they're competitive.
Theoretically upended the Rams.
Yeah.
I remember the last score seemed like it came when it was already about – well, I say that, but look at what the Browns – what happened to the Browns. I think that, for one, with McCarthy, McCarthy is going to benefit from now – now anything he does is going to look impressive. Any wins that they have,
it's got an excuse.
And they've got a hellacious defense. they've got the potential to be a really scary defense now. And so I think Mike McCarthy ends up, if anything, he's probably more of a candidate for coach of the year now. After having been so high on this list.
That is a great take.
If they go 500 while Dak Prescott's gone, and then Prescott comes back and takes them to the playoffs, he'll be coach of the year.
That's tremendous. Yeah. I hadn't even thought about that. Dude went from top three first coach fire to a dark horse coach of the year candidate in 1 week.
As far as Frank Reich now being the second favorite to be the first coach fired.
Yeah.
I don't think he should be that high, if only because remember Jim Irsay and how it went with Pagano, Chuck Pagano. It seemed like 3 years straight that Chuck Pagano was about to be fired, and then they would have a powwow between him and Bill Polian or whoever the GM was at the time, and
Ryan
Grigson would come in. That's right, yeah, Ryan Grigson, and they'd have a kumbaya, and everything would be fine. But eventually, it had to happen. I think Irsay is still in that mode, except now, like Chuck Ballard and Chris Ballard and Frank Reich seemingly have a really good relationship.
Yeah.
So I don't think Irsay is going to pull the trigger so early when he let Pagano stick around as long as he did. I guess the one thing that's changed is it seems like Irsay is more publicly agitated about losses this time around.
Yes.
The further they get away from that Super Bowl, he just is getting more and more edgy about it. Like he's
posting videos.
He's going to be an old man.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
Like he's... He doesn't want to end up like a Ralph Wilson or somebody that spends the last 20 years of his life hoping for that mythical Super Bowl victory.
He's posting videos standing on the tarmac at his airport in front of his jet about like apologizing to the fans like weeks and months later after the loss to Jacksonville. My four, I'm feeling good 2 weeks in. Rule is the favorite. They stink. Ron Rivera, they had a horrible loss to Detroit this week. They're 1-1. Robert Saleh was 2 minutes away from probably being much higher up this list. He's 33-1 now. Mike Vrabel, Seth, 0-2. I don't know that he's going to be the first one fired. I don't even know that he's going to get fired because I think he's done a good job in Tennessee by and large, given what he's had to work with. But it's an uphill climb for Vrabel and the Titans this year, man. We're going to get a lot of despondent Vrabel this year.
Oh, yeah, let's listen to
that.
Yeah,
despondent Vrabel. Here's him after the loss.
Which is play calling. I mean, playing and play calling go hand in hand. You know, there's always going to be some plays out there as a player that you wish you had back. There's always going to be calls as a play caller that you wish you had back. Now is not the time. We've never done it. It's not going to be about one person. We got our asses kicked. Plain and simple. They out-coached us. They outplayed us. And that's the definition of it. And so we're going to get back to work, and we're going to figure out a way to win a football game.
How do you think – how's Vrabel going to handle a season, you think, where they might win 5 or 6 games?
I think he actually will do all right. I mean, if you're not winning, obviously not doing all right. But I think you're talking about like kind of emotionally.
Yeah,
or
yeah.
Is he going to melt down? I think what's the expression they use in the military? You eat your own chow or whatever. Whatever you're pushing, you better be all. Yeah, you better be subscribing to it yourself. You know, whatever philosophy or motivational stuff you're throwing out there, you got to be sure that you're living that example. I feel like Vrabel is that guy. So, like, he's tough, but he's also tough on himself. And I think he knows when to be positive and when to be a hard ass. So I don't think he's going to have some kind of a meltdown or anything. I mean, look at what happened last year when they had the most different starting combinations in the history of football,
yeah.
The most guys played, all those different things that were extreme volatility on their roster from week to week. And they ended up doing very well with it. I think that's because he's the real deal as a motivator. So I don't think they struggle with it too much. The biggest issue there would be is if him and John Robinson start blaming each other. If he starts feeling like, wait a second, this is the roster I have. This is the second year in a row now that it's just been a mess. It does, and it's not backstabbing if you think what you're doing is for the good of the team. Does he, at some point, does he go to ownership and say, like, we gotta switch something out with the GM? It's either him or me.
Man,
you know?
That would be something. That would be something. We're getting you ready.
Setbacks happen if you do it right in front of him.
That's right. Yeah. I did it right here. You heard me. I think you stink.
Listen, John, I'm about to go tell the owners that you suck. Okay.
Yeah. You want to come with me? So I can point to you. This guy right here, he sucks. We're getting you ready for Texans and Bears. It's Sunday afternoon in Chicago. We're going to be getting you ready throughout the week here. Of course, Sunday, it all gets started at 9 a.m. with Texans Countdown presented by Modelo. Kickoff at noon. Postgame starts right as soon as the clock hits zeros here on Sports Radio 610. Up next, NFL players living at home with their parents. Would you be able to do this if you were making the money that this player is making? One particular Houston Texan is doing just that. We will tell you who it is next.
Call from mom. Answer it. Call silenced.
Instacart knows nothing gets between you and the game. That's why they make ordering from your couch easy. Stock up today and get all your groceries for the week delivered in as fast as 30 minutes without missing a minute of the game.
You have 47 new voicemails.
Download the app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
Okay, picture this. It's Friday afternoon when a thought hits you. I can waste another weekend doing the same old whatever, or I can conquer it. I can hop into my all-new Hyundai Santa Fe and hit the road. Any road. The steeper, the better. Because my all-new Santa Fe is available with H-Track all-wheel drive, so I can hit the trail without a worry in the world. Heck, with three rows and best-in-class rear cargo space, I can pack the whole family in with all our gear. We've got available dual wireless charging for our phones, so we'll never lose touch with civilization, and we won't lose touch with the primordial power of Mother Earth. So which is it? Waste the weekend or do something a little more epic and conquer it in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com or call 562-314-4603 for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.
Sports Radio 610 presents Payne and Pendergast.
And I love this story, and people around town love this story. This was making the rounds yesterday. DJ Bien-Aimé from ESPN.com, he's the Texans beat writer for ESPN.com, had a story about Jalen Petrie, who, safety Jalen Petrie, rookie out of Baylor, who, as many of you know, is local. He's from Stafford, grew up in Stafford, played at Stafford High School. Going to be a good player for this team. And he made $3.6 million on his signing bonus. He's making about $700,000 in base salary this year. That escalates over the next 4 years, all the way up to nearly $2 million 4 years from now. So he's going to make several million dollars over the next few years, guaranteed.
Assuming he makes the team and all that.
Yeah. But he's got at least $4 million in the bank right now.
Now you're being Ian Rappaport. You're saying guaranteed like it's some casual thing that doesn't actually mean guaranteed.
Some of it's guaranteed.
So, yeah.
So anyways, he's got a lot of money in the bank. He's living at home with his parents right now. He's living at home with his parents, and DJ Bien-Aimé had a long article about how that all came about and what it's like having an NFL player living under your roof, living under the same roof that he lived under when he played peewee ball.
I like his family. I like his parents. Based on nothing except, based on two things. This article by DJ Bien-Aimé and the picture of Jalen Petrie and his mom and his dad who, boy, this is happening so often now, and I'm realizing that a lot of the players' parents are younger than I am.
Yes!
And at the very least, they look like they're younger than me. Like, DJ's, I thought it was DJ's, I thought it was Jalen's brother in this photo here, like on the other side of his mom, because his dad's got a hat pulled on, so you can't quite see his face immediately, and he's smaller than Jalen, so I thought it was Jalen Petrie's younger brother or something. But yeah, so his parents, who look very young and healthy, are couldn't be more pleased to have their son still staying with him. The part that I appreciated the most about this was when they said that when he gets home, they don't talk a whole lot of football. Because that was, to me, that would always be my biggest worry. If I were to live with my parents as a football player, it would be that as soon as I got home, they'd want to ask me about everything they read about in the paper and all that. It sounds like they understand, like, okay, he needs to just decompress and relax and go, you know, play video games in his room or whatever you do with your parents. Yeah.
Well, and it sounds like that's been kind of an adjustment because it sounds like they talked a lot of football in the house while he and his brother were growing up in the house, you know?
Yeah, yeah.
You know, that's been kind of an adjustment, but he, you know, he's, but back then he wasn't leaving the house at 5 a.m. By the way, leaving the house at 5 a.m. in the same Dodge Challenger that his parents bought him like 4 years ago. So he hasn't bought a new car yet.
Sophomore year in college. Right. He's living very frugally.
He is. And I think that's my, one of my favorite parts. One of my favorite parts of this story, Seth, is the very beginning when DJ is laying out the backstory for this whole thing, saying that Jalen was asking his mom to search online for houses. And it sounded like she was like when DJ was asking about why he was living at home, she was kind of hemming and hawing a little bit about, you know, real estate and I'm looking up homes. And finally, his dad just cuts in and says, she's going around in circles. Hey, man, cut to the chase. Jalen's cheap. he ain't finna be flashy is what it says.
He wants to look nice, don't get me wrong, but Jalen ain't finna get off the airplane with no mink coat.
Yeah, so, I love that.
Which is that, you know, keep that cheapness. I do think maybe it's just because it's written about more. There is more of a vein of frugality running through the NFL now, even as salaries have escalated. And I think a few notable high-profile players kind of made a show of it, like in telling young guys to be careful with their money and everything, to where now there are a bunch of guys that live extremely frugally. Like, I'm going to live like I'm fresh out of college making $60,000 a year with a job, you know, like, which is still good for your first year out of college, but like living like normal human beings. And I don't think Jalen Petrie's going to stay a normal human being in terms of the way he looks. I only know this because his mom said that the initial sticker shock for Jalen was when he realized that the houses he was looking at and wanted to buy were going to be about $10,000 a month in mortgage.
Did you do the reverse math?
Yeah, that's about, he was probably looking, interest rates have risen a lot. It's one financial smart thing I've done is I, just by sheer chance and circumstance, when I refinanced my mortgage,
sure.
I got it. Yeah, but anyway, that's probably about a $2 million house. So with 20% down. So I think that hopefully with this time to sit and live with his parents at home, he'll realize, like, okay, as a young man with no kids, no wife, anything like that, you don't need a $2 million house. It's you know, it's something, a condo. Kevin Durant was living in a condo in Oklahoma City until he left. I encourage young players to go ahead and buy a fourplex, and then your tenants are paying your rent for you.
That's a good recommendation.
Just get started off on actually building some genuine equity instead of just paying rent via a mortgage.
I'll say this. Depending on where you're looking, $2 million don't get you what it used to.
That's true, yeah. If he's looking at, like, West University or something.
Yeah, or even, like your Montrose.
Enjoy your shack, fella.
Yeah. Like, Amy
enjoy
and I.
Enjoy your 1970s ranch house for $2 million, yeah.
Amy and I love the building we're living in right now, but it's in a neighborhood that's really, really nice. But eventually we're going to move out and buy a house at some point again. And we walk through the neighborhood, and we walk through there, and we're like, wow, if we want to stay in this neighborhood, we might not just have to stay in this apartment building that we're in forever because the prices got really, really high.
Well, that, you know, the thing about renting is that you are still paying property tax. You're just, you know, you're helping your landlord pay your
chip
property
in.
Tax.
Yeah.
You're all
we're doing our part.
But yeah, I do like that he's got this convenience of living 20 minutes away from the 20 minutes away from the stadium. And one of the hardest things as a rookie is it's weird. You go and it's like all of a sudden you kind of do, you've got the money to be able to have your own place. So you do it because that's what you do. And then all of a sudden you realize like, oh, wow, I just came out of an environment where I was surrounded by friends all day long. Like 24 hours a day, all school year long, I'm surrounded by friends and teammates. And then all of a sudden you go to like, oh, I'm living in a place that's actually too big for me.
Yeah.
And there's nobody here.
Yep.
And it kind of, Don't get me wrong, it's all awesome, but that part of it is kind of a shock, and probably not the best for your mental health and performance and everything. So I think guys having roommates their rookie year, you know, no matter what your income level is a really good idea. If it's a guy,
good transition.
Yeah. Like, oh, not an entourage, but like an actual teammate or somebody like, you know, somebody that's, you know, genuinely has your best interest in mind.
Well, back in the Kubiak era, all those Colorado State guys that were on the team, they all lived together. Which one bought the house, but David Anderson, Joel Dreesen, Mike Brizel, like they all three lived in a house together in some part of town here.
You know, and this is one of the things that went wrong with the Texans initially, and I still get angry about it. There was a person involved with the Texans who would later be dismissed, was in charge of helping guys find homes and all that early on. It turned out that he was getting a kickback from a realtor way out in Missouri City and out that way. So a lot of guys ended up way out there. And then a lot of other guys, like, we decided we wanted to live, you know, for one, live in the, you know, in or close to the city or inside the loop, but also very close to the stadium. And then other guys, you know, Pearland was just getting big back in 2002.
A lot of Pearland guys.
So a lot of guys went to Pearland, and it spread everybody out. And it still feels like, in talking to guys, you know, from the past 20 years, there's something about the fact that the players themselves are spread out that makes it a little bit tougher to have that same tight-knit feeling that you get on some teams in the NFL. Because proximity matters a lot.
No doubt.
That's one thing they found with friendships and everything. Geography matters way more than you think it does. Convenience, ability to just hang out and drop by. And it's just Houston's a tough – as we know, like, Houston is a spread-out city. It's just tough that way.
Especially the older you get. You know, it's like, man, my goal when I get home and I park my truck is to not have to leave the parking spot that it's in for the rest of the day. Like, I don't want to go anywhere. That's my goal.
Remember, we were talking to Jonathan Joseph at that one event, and he was talking about how, like, yeah, he and Kareem are best friends, and yet – when they were here together the last couple of years, like, they never saw each other just because they didn't live close to each other.
Yeah.
It's hard.
It's an easy city for it to happen in. There are a couple other fun facts in this Jalen Petrie article. I give it the highest of recommendations to go find it on ESPN.com. DJ did a really good job with this article. And if you missed it, Jalen Petrie lives at home with his parents in Stafford. Fun fact, Jalen Petrie wears number 5 because of Reggie Bush. Bush was his favorite player growing up, or one of his favorite players, and his dad was a big Reggie Bush fan. So DJ asked him, well, were you mad when the Texans took Mario Williams instead of Reggie Bush? And apparently Jalen Petrie's dad was a Saints fan at that time. So he was cool with Reggie Bush ending up with the Saints. How about this one? Fun fact. Jalen Petrie's dad, Rick, coached their 6th and 7th grade AAU team, and the name of the team? In your face.
Yeah. It's a good...
I like that.
I like his dad. His dad's a UPS driver.
Yeah.
So, like, his mom's been a bank teller for 21 years, and his dad's been a UPS driver for 28 years, which I'm guessing, I don't know, UPS, it works differently in some places. But, that's probably why he looks like he's so young. He's been out running around for 28 years.
Do you think that if... Okay, I wonder if Jalen Petrie's parents listen to the show, first of all, and if they do, particularly their dad, if he's disgusted with me, because remember like a couple of months ago where I said, man, I could get a job where I just drive around and deliver things all day. I'd be really good at that as I get older.
Yeah.
And you were asking me like, whoa, bro, you mean like UPS? And I'm like, sure. And you're like, dude, have you ever watched a UPS driver work? You would die in 15 minutes. You didn't say that? But if you did, you would be accurate about that? Do you think that Rick Petrie is disgusted with Sean T. Pendergast?
I think so. I think he. I don't think he probably wouldn't appreciate the lack of respect.
It is disrespect.
That you showed like how grueling that job is, especially in Houston, Texas.
I know,
like,
I know.
John, have you ever seen even the guys in our building? You might think like, oh, well, yeah, but one of your routes is Greenway Plaza, so, you know, how much work could it be? Those guys are sweating their butts off
when they
get on and off that elevator because I think UPS is like, oh, you're in one spot.
Yes.
There's 400,000 packages. You can do that in 90 minutes, right?
Okay, yeah. Okay. Rick Petrie, if you're listening right now, total permission that if you see me at a game, Bud Light Plaza before the game, Texans countdown, you have permission to walk up to me and don't do anything physical, but just tell me how disgusted you are with me and poke fun at me. Make fun of me because I said I would want to be a UPS driver at some point.
I do. I don't know if it's just because I end up, you know how I am, Sean. I end up talking to people a lot about their jobs. And there's something about delivery drivers that I feel like they are, they're almost like the modern era farmer. The salt of the earth people who are doing a job that's it's manual labor, but it's got a whole lot of street smarts that goes into it, and like logistical planning above and beyond what the computer is telling you to do, and people, person, customer management, and everything. Delivery drivers are some of my favorite people. I feel like there's a certain hustle about them. They have to have a certain element of pride in their job, because if you don't, you're gonna be atrocious at it. You'll be just absolutely awful. Plus, you almost sometimes get killed by dogs.
That's true. They all seem very friendly to me. You know, they're generally very friendly people too.
It's because you're not a dog. When they look at you, they're like, "What is this creature? Is that a dog?" Oh, okay. Hey, buddy, how are you? It's nice to see you.
Is that an alien? No, it's a bald human being.
I was living somewhere once, and when my nephew was with us, and he had a dog, and the UPS driver used to always bring him a treat. And I'm being careful about saying where this is, because apparently they're not allowed to bring treats anymore. Mm. So the one day he came up, and my nephew's dog was sitting there waiting for the treat, and the driver got out, and he's like giving me this look, kind of like the look your buddy is giving you when you need to shut your mouth in front of his girlfriend or something.
Yeah.
Because he had this guy riding with him, and the dog's waiting for the biscuit, and I'm like, "Hey, dude, what's going on?" And he's like, "Oh, nothing at all, Seth, nothing at all." And he dropped the package off and he left, and the dog looked so crestfallen.
Despondent.
And the next day he came, he's like, "Dude, man, my supervisor was with me and we're not supposed to give the treats out."
Oh.
I'm sorry. I was like, "No, I figured." I was like, I was about to say something. Thank God I hadn't started drinking yet. I totally didn't be like, "Where's the treats? You give treats every single day. You always come in saying, 'Screw the man, here's a treat.'"
Yep.
And now no treat. For Nia
and dog. Next time you see the guy, he's working at a McDonald's or something like that, because you got him fired. Yep. All right. Payne and Pendergast with you. John McClain joins us at the top of the hour. Player from this past weekend taking blame for a loss. I think Seth and I are both going to stick up for this guy. We've got headlines to get to as well. John McClain, top of the hour. That's next.
Hi, I'm Lauren Sherman, the host of Fashion People. I love fashion, obviously, but shopping for fashion online is kind of annoying. There's endless scrolling, my size is always out of stock, and I can't actually find what I want. No one has really made this work for me. That is until List. Instead of browsing different stores one by one, on List you can see and shop all of the best fashion. List is the secret shopping weapon now used by all my most stylish, cool, and in-the-know friends. Don't shop around. Join 200 million fashion shoppers, including me, on List.com. That's LYST, or download the List app on the App Store today.
Selling a little or a lot? Shopify helps you do your thing, however you cha-ching. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage, to the first real-life store stage, all the way to the did we just hit a million orders stage. Shopify is here to help you grow. Whether you're selling scented soap or offering outdoor outfits, Shopify helps you sell everywhere. From their all-in-one e-commerce platform to their in-person POS system, wherever and whatever you're selling, Shopify is got you covered. Shopify helps you turn browsers into buyers with the internet's best converting checkout. 15% better on average compared to other leading commerce platforms. And sell more with less effort thanks to Shopify Magic, your AI-powered all-star. Shopify powers 10% of all e-commerce in the U.S. And Shopify is the global force behind Allbirds, Rothy's, and Brooklinen, and millions of other entrepreneurs of every size across 175 countries. Plus, Shopify's award-winning 24/7 help is there to support your success every step of the way. Because businesses that grow, grow with Shopify. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/odyssey podcast, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/odyssey podcast now to grow your business, no matter what stage you're in. shopify.com/odyssey podcast.
With LinkedIn Jobs, we tap into a network of more than a billion professionals to help you find quality professionals quickly and easily for any role you need.
Marketing wizards? Found them.
Software engineers?
Found.
That project manager I could never seem to hire?
And found. LinkedIn Jobs quickly matches your roles with candidates with the right skills and experience. In fact, 86% of small businesses get a qualified candidate within 24 hours. Post your first job for free and get started at linkedin.com/decide. That's linkedin.com/decide. Terms and conditions apply.
Live from the Twin Peaks studios, Sports Radio 610 presents Payne and Pendergast.
All right, Payne and Pendergast with you. We talked quite a bit on Monday and Tuesday this week about that loss that the Cleveland Browns had on Sunday to the New York Jets. I went back and rewatched the last 4 minutes of that game. It's really hysterical to go watch the Brown fans going crazy when they go up 30-17. Nick Chubb scores a touchdown with about 2 minutes to go in the game to put them up 30-17. Cade York, their field goal kicker, misses an extra point. Nobody cares. They're up 30-17 with 2 minutes to go, and they are celebrating. They're going to beat the Jets. They're going to go 2-0 to start the season. And then I think most of you listening know all hell broke loose after that. The Jets score a long touchdown on their second play, 66 yards. They recover an onside kick. They go down. They score a touchdown to go up 31-30 with like 20 seconds to go in the game. Jacoby Brissett throws a pick to close things out, and that was it. That was that. One of the most mathematically improbable losses really in the history of the NFL. Recent NFL for sure, Seth.
I mean, it was a chain of events that really could only be pulled off by a team like the Cleveland Browns.
Yes.
So it's unbelievable, but it is also, and look, as I say that, knowing full well that the Texans and the Browns are uttered in the same breath often these days, but it's a chain of events that if you had to handicap which team it would happen to, the Browns are one of those teams.
On so many levels.
Yeah, they don't get excused completely. You know, you just if you had to choose amongst NFL teams, there's certain ones you'd say, okay, this isn't going to happen to the Patriots. It's not going to happen to the 49ers, teams like that.
Yes.
But the Browns, certainly, it could happen. Yes.
The Browns, because they're the Browns, and then the added karmic level of 2022 where they gave Deshaun Watson $230 million guaranteed. I feel like the football gods, at least temporarily, are frowning upon that. So Nick Chubb, though, is evidently getting a lot of heat. Because if you recall 2 years ago against the Texans, the Browns are up by 3 points with the waning moments of the game. Chubb could have walked into the end zone for a touchdown with a couple minutes to go in that game, would have made it 17-7, but the Texans would have gotten the ball back. Instead, he went into the fetal position at the goal line before going in, and the Browns just were able to take knees and run the clock out.
Yeah.
He's getting a lot of heat because the Browns were up by a touchdown. Chubb is running in for a touchdown with them up 7. Similar situation, you know, with about 2 minutes to go in the game. If he had just gone into the fetal position at the goal line, then similar situation could play out there for the Browns, as did with them and the Texans a couple of years ago. Instead, he scores, and the Jets are able to get the ball back and improbably win the game. This would have been a lot harder. Well, let's hear. Nick Chubb is taking a lot of heat for not doing what he did a couple of years ago against the Texans, pulling up at the goal line, and he basically put that loss on himself yesterday in his media session.
I probably shouldn't have scored right there, honestly, looking back at it. It cost us the game. A lot of things went wrong, not just one thing, but collectively as a unit, as a team, we could have all did things different. But, I mean, it's only a problem because we didn't win, you know, so I probably should have went down.
You know, this falls into the category, Sean, of no good deed goes unpunished.
Yeah.
Because when Nick Chubb did that a couple years ago versus the Texans, it was still a novelty to a lot of people. John McClain was kind of blown away by it because it has happened before. Running backs have done it. It's been a point of discussion before. Remember with the Giants when Eli Manning was telling the running back to go down and not score the touchdown. And there was
Bradshaw.
Yep. That's right. And people were kind of debating about it. So it wasn't like it was a completely foreign concept, but it certainly wasn't common. And it certainly wasn't the standard, this is what you have to do. But because Nick Chubb did it, and I feel like that, for whatever reason, kind of took off or became a notable point, I think maybe because it was Nick Chubb, and it was like he was such an explosive guy, and when he was really like getting a lot of attention, he all of a sudden, the standard that he set became the one that now he is gonna, it's the cross he's going to be nailed to. And yes, the other good thing, by being a good teammate and saying, yes, I selflessly, I unselfishly should have not scored. Now people take that and run with it and say, see, he admitted
he's in
the wrong. Yep. And, Nick Chubb can't do wrong by doing right. I don't know, whatever the expression is.
Seth, I feel like anybody who has that take just is not, either didn't see the play, like they're just looking at the box score, like, oh, well, of course he should have gone down. Look at the down and distance and time situation. Or they don't understand, and I'm not saying this as somebody who's played in an NFL game before. You can speak to this, obviously, far better than I can.
And as somebody that was a running back my freshman year in high school.
That's right. So you know.
So I know exactly.
You were actually the first one to ever do this, and nobody talks about it. Back in 1993.
But he was the line to gain. Remember, there were 2 minutes left. They had to get, if they wanted to run the clock out, if that was the goal, then they're going to need to get a first down. The line to gain was at about the 1¾ yard line.
Yep.
It was inside of 2 yards.
Yep.
At least according to the marker that was right there. So Nick Chubb was actively trying to get to the line to gain at least.
Yep.
But he was breaking a tackle at like 4 yards. So he was going to have to make the decision to, first, I'm going to break this tackle. Then I'm going to aim for that little 1½-yard landing strip, like I'm landing a jet on an aircraft carrier in the middle of a storm, and touch the ball down in the midst of even more traffic, as opposed to just going up by two full touchdowns. If your idiot kicker can kick the it's asinine that people are criticizing him for this.
On Joe Flacco, I mean, let's call it what it is. On a team that's being quarterbacked by Joe Flacco, like you should hold a 13-point lead with 2 minutes to go against Joe Flacco. My first thought after I watched it, I'm like, okay, well, maybe he should have. The next play was going to be the 2-minute warning, so the clock was going to stop either way with whatever he did. So I'm like, well, maybe he should just run out of bounds. Like, no, he couldn't have even done that. The defender forced him back in bounds. And then he would have had to go in the fetal position in the middle of live bullets flying. Seth, if he had gone down at the 1 yard line, he would have gotten hurt probably.
If he had gone out, was it going to be inside of 2 minutes at the end of the play?
It was going to be the 2 minute warning. There were 2 minutes and 2 seconds left when they snapped the ball.
Because
Kareem Hunt had gone out of bounds on the previous play.
So he wouldn't have gotten criticized with any credibility for going out of bounds
because
it was going to stop anyway.
Yep.
But we're putting a whole lot on the running back, honestly, to make a whole lot of decisions when the.
People are tackling him.
You score a touchdown, you go up by two. It's one thing if it's to go up by. It's one thing if the touchdown puts you up by a touchdown or puts you up by 10 points.
Yeah.
But the notion that somehow your defense is going to let up 2 scores in that situation inside of 2 minutes. Not two scores, but two touchdowns. You just can't operate that
and
way.
And that your kicker's going to miss the point after? Like, all these things. Like on the list of people who did wrong to let the Browns lose that game, Nick Chubb is, like, 28th on the list.
Not to mention, do you know how hard it is to actually pull off a successful onside kick these days?
Just hit, yeah. Amari Cooper was the one who dropped the onside kick. Like, nobody's talking about him. You know, nobody's talking about the secondary that let up a 66-yard touchdown to Corey Davis with nobody within 20 yards of him. It's crazy.
Nick Chubb, the man that we gave unto the Browns with our Brock Osweiler shenanigans.
Yes, ties to the Texans. He's basically a Texan.
I will defend him to the death.
Yep.
I will never to do otherwise would be to basically be saying that Brock Osweiler was a great football player.
It's like watching your biological child do great things with their adopted family, and we're stuck watching here from afar. Nick Chubb is basically a Texan.
They adopted my child because I know. No, I'm incapable as a father. So, like, what am I going to do? Be mad? I want to be happy for him. Look, he's with a good family.
Yeah.
They pay their bills on time. They show up to Little League games and everything.
I get it. I signed Osweiler. I got it, okay? Like, literally the pick that they traded with Osweiler to the Browns. All right, let's...
Nick Chubb gets a call from the Texans when he turns 25 years old. I was like, oh, yeah, thank you. Oh, Dad, is it? Oh, okay.
I just want to meet you for coffee.
Funny, I don't remember you seeing you around much, Dad.
Only time I remember is running for 140 against you when I didn't know that you were my dad. All right, let's...
That was my hardest moment as a father.
I felt like
Darth Vader. I was like, I'm going to have to cut this kid's hand off. And then, boom, he kills me. Yeah.
Ironic.
Spoiler alert, everybody.
Yeah. That's Empire Strikes Back. All right, let's get to a few headlines. John McClain in a couple of minutes.
Payne and Pendergast with today's headlines. Brought to you by BaywayJeep.com.
7:55, but I enjoy talking. I had to talk this Chubb thing here, man. We had to get that out. All right. Astros and Rays last night. 5-0, the Astros win. Two straight shutouts. And this ain't the A's they're playing. This is the Rays. This is a playoff baseball team that the Astros have made look like foolish little pony leaguers for the last two nights. 5-0, the final score. The big stories from this game. One, Kyle Tucker gets his 100th RBI, 18th Astro in team history to go over the century mark. He's at the century mark right now. Jeremy Pena, 3-run home run that he smoked to left center field. That was good to see. Guys are coming. Seth, things are rounding into form for the Astros right now. Yordan, Bregman, and Altuve are all hitting right now. The pitching is otherworldly right now. Presley came in and cleaned up a little bit of a mess that Brian Abreu made in the ninth inning, and they kept the shutout going. So good night to be an Astro, and they close the series out tonight in Tampa Bay.
Now that we're winding down, and it's been so long since I really looked at the AL West standings in earnest, because I always toggle it to just the AL standings just to check the playoff seating and everything. I feel like the Astros have done to the AL West what the Patriots did to the AFC East for so many years.
Yes.
Where it's, you create this situation where teams start psychologically doing themselves in. I'm more talking about on the management side, the team building side. Like, you start to overthink everything because you're trying to figure out, okay, how do we match this organization that just seems to crush us continually? And I think it takes you out of like the mode of actually trying to plan to be a good team. Because they've just laid waste. There's no reason the AL West should be as bad. I feel like they've single-handedly turned the Angels into the abomination that they are.
Yes.
You can have a couple of the best players in baseball on your team and still be a middle-of-the-pack, not even middle-of-the-pack team anymore.
No.
It's amazing.
They've never been a good team since the Astros hit this run of dominance. And Seth, it forces those teams in that division. I love this analogy because what the Patriots did forced a lot of these teams into making some desperate moves from time to time. And you look at signing Anthony Rendon to go with Otani and Trout. That was a big, huge contract that's not paid off for the Angels. Look at the Rangers. Like, the Rangers, by all rights, the Rangers should be a team that should have spent the last 5 years nurturing its minor league system the same way the Astros did. And what did they do? They literally went out and spent $500 million this offseason on 6-year contracts and 10-year contracts for Semien and for Corey Seager. Yeah. Like, you know, the teams just look at it and they start to do desperate things. I love that analogy with the Patriots.
I think that also you have to look at the Astros. They haven't just laid waste to the AL West. I feel like they've at least played a hand in Aaron Judge ultimately leaving the Yankees, where, you know, since 2015, the Astros have been responsible for 3 of the Dodgers' departures from the playoffs for a team that prides itself on winning World Series on the reg. The Yankees can't even make it there, in large part because of the Astros in 3 out of the last 7 years so far. I feel like they've dismantled the Yankees too.
Yes.
They've had the largest hand in dismantling the Yankees.
It's an amazing run, and I don't want to take it for granted. I mean, 5 division titles in 6 years is it's remarkable. 5 straight ALCSs I don't need to say it's incredible. Texans, bit of news with the Texans. Justin Britt, we don't know exactly what the issue is with Justin Britt. What we do know is that he's not going to play football for a while. He was put on the reserved non-football illness list yesterday. Scott Quisenberry, who was a starting center this past Sunday against the Broncos, looks to be the starting center for the foreseeable future, at least. And Jimmy Morrissey has been called up from the practice squad, so that'll be the backup center. So everybody moves up a rung on the ladder at the center position.
So it seems like the most likely scenario, the one that would make the most sense, and this is pure speculation on my part, is just that Justin Britt, through a combination of just being banged up and injured all through training camp and for much of last year, is not playing at the level that he probably thinks he should be. And I, if I put myself in his shoes, I was there towards the end of my career where I was just, I was embarrassed by the way I was playing. And it's a hard thing to wrestle with and try to figure out, okay, well, am I actually going to ever be good again because I'm injured all the time? Or is this what it is for me? That he's probably struggling with some of that. And maybe, I don't know, maybe the Texans, you know, might have their own opinions about it. So I'm not, I'm not here to judge whatever he's going through. It's just that I think from a pure football standpoint, the Texans might be better off with Scott Quisenberry anyway.
Yeah.
There's unknown upside with Scott Quisenberry. He's still a young player. I thought he played reasonably well in the game on Sunday. And maybe you got to get that consistency back anyway. So, you know, I wish Justin Britt the best in working through whatever he's working through right now. And maybe it's not even that dramatic. Maybe it's something much simpler than that. But it's a non-football injury list. I feel good moving forward. I do. I feel like, you know, maybe they're being careful out of respect to Justin Britt.
Mm-hmm.
But just, I'd say, in my mind, Scott Quisenberry is a starter from here on out.
Yeah.
Until he proves that he shouldn't be. Like, that's the guy you got to depend on now. I think he's ready for it.
Yeah, I think just flat out, he may be a better football player at this point.
You could spend the weekend doing the same old whatever, or you could conquer the weekend in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
Oh, 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 O'Reilly.
Protect your vehicle's engine with a full synthetic oil change and save with Mobil 1 at O'Reilly Auto Parts. Purchase 5 quarts of Mobil 1 full synthetic motor oil and receive a $10 O'Reilly gift card after rebate. See store for details. With your Mobil 1 purchase, you'll also receive 2x points during Old Rewards Bonus Points Month at O'Reilly Auto Parts.
Oh, 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 O'Reilly Auto Parts.